Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.
Yeah, my name's Mick, Mental Health Extra for a Tuesday. Jay got mightily confused yesterday because I was off, so there's no Mental Health Monday podcast to listen to.
Yeah, so what are we going to talk about?
We're going to talk about lots of different things. There will be a Mental Health Monday podcast next week. Apologies, I had a big family wedding. And it was one of them, you know, when it's on a Sunday and it's in danger of passing into the Monday. And you're trying to work out either, do you get a taxi, but it's quite far away, so do you get a hotel? If you get the hotel, you've got no chance of getting to work the following morning. It was just easier to take the time off.
It's a selfish, that, isn't it?
In many ways, yes.
See, because we got married on a weekday. However, we chose to get married on a Friday because we give everybody the weekend. So getting married on a Sunday... is no.
Yeah, but everyone had the weekend anyway.
Yeah.
What you were asking them was to take a day off work still.
Yeah, but then,
everyone already had, the weekend was already there.
Yeah, but they, yes, but they had a long weekend.
They had the same weekend.
Well, no.
The same weekend, they had to take a holiday.
Yes, but they got a holiday, nice wedding, and then they got the weekend to get over it.
Okay, no, that's fine.
And a bank holiday Monday, thank you.
Are you trying to claim some sort of moral victory over me?
I feel like I started a point and then I've been confused now.
There's lots on the agenda, lots we're going to talk about. Lots coming up in future editions, by the way, of Mental Health Monday. If you want to get involved in the programme, you can do mick@radiocity.co.uk. The team behind the mind map, Jake, we've talked about these guys before. They've on their website, themindmap.co.uk, just put up their interview with Everton defender Leighton Baines in a feature called Inner Space. He talks about mental health from his own point of view in terms of how he relaxes away from the game, but also how the sport overall is trying to embrace issues and aspects of mental health in terms of looking after the well-being of players, but also looking at their performance and how positive mental health can improve your physical performance as well. The team behind the mind map have given us a few clips that we can hear. So let's take a listen to Leighton Baines, Everton defender, talking about how football is embracing mental as well as physical health.
I think we are getting there and hopefully things will continue to improve, and the more people, you know, that do come out and, as I say, show those vulnerabilities, then, you know, the more it may encourage other people to, you know, even if it's not, even if you're not comfortable and you don't want to come out and talk about it, just feel consoled almost in a way that, you know, you look into these people whose lives maybe look perfect and know that, you know, it's not the case. No one's life's perfect. Everyone's dealing with something. And, you know, some people's problems or issues will be bigger than others, but, you know, everyone's got to deal with what's on their plate, really. And I think it's about finding the right tools, whether that's somebody you can talk to, whether that, you know, there's so much out there available to us now. You know, things like therapy and stuff can be expensive, but there's apps, there's podcasts, you find the right places, there's books to read, and you can educate yourself and I say it, finding a sort of, you can cultivate a structure in your life that will help you if you're willing to put in the work. You know, you've got to be willing to do that. You can't just, you know, expect things to get better just because you want them to. You've got to work at it, and, you know, that's going to be time. And like I say, there's enough outlets now, I think, for it hopefully not to cost too much money that sometimes people haven't got. That there's something out there for you to be able to find some help.
That's Leighton Baines there. When Premier League footballers are talking about mental health provision being cost prohibitive, we know maybe we're just not maybe striking the balance right.
No, I don't know what. I've got a lot of time for Leighton Baines, not just as an Everton supporter, but I think he seems grounded and he seems to get it. You know, that's fantastic that he'd done that event for my map, but the thing that came across for me was that he wasn't just there as just a sound piece, as a celebrity, somebody who would just lend a voice to a good cause and say, this is great what to do. And I do feel like he got it, he understood it, and he made some really, really relevant points there.
Yeah, absolutely. And people can check that out in full, that interview, themindmap.co.uk. It's on the homepage, and people can watch the full interview as well, talking about mental health in football and how that all works out. themindmap.co.uk. There is still that sense that, like, some people are wising up to this mental health thing, but I almost got a sense from that it's still not a mainstream thing within football. Then obviously then within society, which actually I almost get the sense that if football clubs all focus on mental health and talked about the fact they were focusing on mental health, I can't help but think that those are the sort of things which would generally seep into everyday society a little bit easier.
Absolutely, because it would change people's references.
I think like metatarsal. Everyone knows about metatarsal injuries. People now, when they get injuries and it's an Achilles problem or it's a cruciate ligament problem, people go, oh, he's out for 8 to 9 months. Mm. People know that from football, and people didn't know that outside of the knowledge that they've gathered from football. So football fans who can come from all walks of life have the ability to adopt this kind of information without being patronised with it.
Yeah, and it's that idea as well, is that nobody says that a footballer or a sportsman can't be physically injured. You know, at no point does anybody say, well, look, he's rich and famous, he can't pull a muscle or break a leg. And without kind of going down that cliche side of things, it's something that you associate with a footballer, with a sportsman, and the mental side of things isn't. But at the same time, if you think about it, how mentally strong you have to be in certain parts of the game. You know, we're talking about the World Cup over the last couple of weeks, and that mentality of the England team if they're coming up to penalties. I mean, talking about pressure, talk about resilience, and that mental side of the game is just as big a part of it as it is the physical.
I think so as well, and I think the other thing is, you know, it's not an idea that you're going to supercharge players mentally to be able to achieve, but actually I guess if you are part of a sporting organisation, any organisation where you're looking after people and trying to get the best from people, what you don't want is your mental health to prohibit your physical health, i.e. what you don't want is there to be, when it comes to a penalty, that your mind is incapable of dealing with the situation when clearly your body is physically capable of dealing with the situation. That's one of the things where I think, and I kind of get the sense from Gareth Southgate, they've done a lot of work on that. They've talked about not where you're going to place it, top right-hand corner, nobody can ever stop it there. They've talked about being in the moment and living each moment within that moment, as opposed to thinking, everything's on me, it's all going to fail, everything's going to go wrong if I make this mistake. It's about just having that moment.
Yeah, and if anybody knows about that, it's Gareth Southgate as well. You know, the kind of the journey that he's been on, especially on like a national level. Even if you look at people like David Beckham and that kind of turnaround that he had, if you miss a penalty, if you are the villain and coming back, imagine what that's going to do to your mental health. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Gareth Southgate's been through that, and I think you're absolutely right, and that's the kind of effect that he's having and trying to drill that attitude through to the players. But also, I don't think it's a coincidence that you've got players like Danny Rose, who, whilst in the England camp, is doing interviews about struggling with his mental health and depression, being on antidepressants. So, yeah, I think the more and more references, and we always say this, we say this every week about role models, but it's about having a reference for somebody to say, ah, okay, I recognise that because I've heard an interview or I've seen this. It's normalising it.
I think it was when we were doing our mental health marathon, Stan Collymore came on and he was talking about going to the then Villa manager, John Gregory, and saying, I need help. And he went off to, I think it was the Priory or the States. I forget where he went for time away from the game. And he came back, and I think it was some of the senior players within the squad. And I think it was the era of Hugo Ekiog, Mark Bosnich, Gareth Southgate being one of them. All pulled him to one side going, what do you think you're doing? And I think he'd said later on through the years, Gareth Southgate had said to him, look, if I knew then what I know now, we wouldn't have given you, you know, pelters. We wouldn't have given you stick. We'd have been there to the point where you wouldn't have had to have gone and disappeared and taken time away in the first place, which gives you a sense that people are learning, but this is something which is being learned all the time. The mindmap.co.uk, it's also got a link to the work they're doing in regard to mental first aid, supporting as well the campaign, the Where's Your Headache campaign, to get mental health first aiders in all workplaces as well. All links via the mindmap.co.uk. Simon Pegg. Actor Simon Pegg's done an interview with The Guardian this week. He's been talking about life with depression and alcoholism. Again, one of those people you think, Simon Pegg. The funny bloke from Shaun of the Dead, Space. Then, of course, he's been in Star Trek. He's talked about drink-fueled oblivion. He said, I'd feel like I'm in a film with Tom Cruise. I've got the part of Scotty in Star Trek. This should make me feel happy. But it wasn't. He talks about going into Mission Impossible 3. When I watch that film back, I can see where I was then, which was fairly lost and unhappy and an alcoholic. He calls them the crisis years. He says, I hit it. I'm an actor, so I acted all the bleeping time. He goes on to talk about some of the issues that he's faced it as well. He also talks about that film, which I was struck as a very odd film, The World's End, which is about a pub crawl, which turns into like an alien invasion movie. His character, Gary King, is this guy who's determined to complete a youthful pub crawl, even though the apocalypse is happening. He says, I felt like I was kind of telling people with that movie, because that's what addiction is like. It's like you've grown a second head, and all it wants to do is destroy itself, and it puts that ahead of everything else. Your marriage, your children, your job. He goes on to talk about the work that he's done through the media and becoming a parent as well. Not that that saved and solved all these different problems, by the way, but theguardian.com have got all the information about that. Tap that into The Guardian. Tim Jones has done the questions, and that's an incredible article from Simon Pegg.
Yeah, I think it's evidence as well, isn't it, that people are feeling a lot more confident in talking about this. And that's part of what you were saying as well about changing that kind of narrative. It's helping, because the more and more interviews and things like this, is the more it's going to stop the us and them type of approach. You know, it's not really talking about if you or somebody you know is going through X, then you can go here. It's people saying, well, do you know what, I went through this and I've learned this and I went here and I got through it and you can too. And that's really important, because it humanizes it and it puts a face and a voice to it. And if that's a face and a voice that you know and recognize and admire, then that's even more stronger and more powerful.
Yeah, I mean, he goes to talk about, you know, we talk about responsible coverage within the media. Talks about the story getting out in the media. He's talking about certain journalists, I don't know where from. They were sinking so low as to be phoning up where I was when he was going through treatment and pretending to be my mother to get the story, which is pretty, well, it's very low. It's absolute rat-like behaviour, isn't it? Yeah. But actually, he says he wants to tell the story. He says, I'm not ashamed of what happened. And I think if anyone finds any relationship to it, then it might motivate them to get well. But I'm not proud of it either. I don't think it's cool, like I was Mr. Rock and Roll, blackout and all that nonsense. He doesn't quite say. He says, it wasn't. It was just terrible. And actually, that's, again, that falls into that thing that we've talked about in the programme before, that sometimes there's a sense of, aha, rock and roll, he loves a drink. He loves, oh, it's a drink, it's drugs, oh, it's addiction, it must be great to be a rock star. He's going, no, it wasn't great. Yeah. It wasn't great at all.
And, you know, with journalists like that, and we've discussed this before, it's like it's a scandal and they're trying to, you're like, this is a person who's not well.
Wait, you know what? I watched The Incredibles yesterday. You know the Incredibles movie?
Yeah.
When was the last time you watched that?
Probably around the time it came out.
So it was like 2006, 2000, yeah. Something like that. You know what happens right at the start? They like the Incredibles, the superhero family.
Yeah.
And then what happens is there's a show reel of like old news footage from The Incredibles. And he goes, Mr. Incredible is being sued by this man who was trying to jump from a building and didn't want to be saved. The man who was attempting suicide is suing Mr. Incredible for...
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that's the actual plot device, which takes him from being the superhero out in the street to being somebody who keeps getting sued. He basically has to face lawsuits, the first one being... And he says this in a children's film, from a man who was attempting suicide, who got saved by Mr. Incredible. And then he was being sued for that. For that reason, he had to then go and get an office job. And I thought, it just struck me as really strange. Yeah. I didn't think how irresponsible or inappropriate. I just thought, that's an interesting plot device in a children's film.
Yeah, it sounds like it's one of them. That's aimed at the adults, isn't it?
Yeah, but he's been doing it like wouldn't that be a funny thing that guy tried to die, but then they saved him. But then the guy sued him. Ha!
Yeah.
Great.
Put it in a Disney
Pixar film. You just think, you know when sometimes something just clanks a little bit and you're not quite so sure. Lots of other things going on this week, by the way, Jake. I told you I've had an extra bonus edition, seeing as there's no mental health extra. Mums with new babies on Merseyside battling mental health problems have been urged to seek help over fears there's a new postcode lottery for services. Research claims that two-thirds of the country has little or no specialist services, including parts of our region. Others are served much better. Person Shape Support in Liverpool have been doing some great work with this one. They help mums with postnatal depression, but are still warning that actually, although the services might be there, it's not always easy to find them, which I think is one of those where if you think you're in a postcode lottery situation, you either get the service or you don't. But even for some, when the service might be available, it's just not signposted, so you don't know that it's there.
Yeah, well, the postcode lottery does exist, and there's absolutely no denying that. The idea about the finer services, that's, you know, it's a conversation that I've had today about, you know, the reason why we set up the Hub of Hope was because services were really hard to find and were really difficult for me to find as I was adding them onto the Hub of Hope, and that's still the case now. I've been this morning with Chester University in Warrington, and they were talking about how even as mental health students, nurses, social workers, they are kind of every day finding out about new services that are actually on the doorstep. And it's kind of like this idea of people working in silos without they're offering incredible support, but it's so hard to find them. And that, you know, the part of that's going to be having a smaller voice is it's difficult, but that's kind of what we want to do is through the Hub of Hope is to promote and give them a platform to say, look at all the help that is available and you can get that support. Because if you're waiting on places that are NHS funded, then, you know, that's where the postcode lottery definitely will come into it. But there's other people and there's other groups that do exist and offer amazing support.
Yeah, hubofhope.co.uk, if you want to type in your postcode there, it might well find that. If you're looking for specific services, it might well be that it's near the top. You might have to look a little bit further, but certainly within a certain radius of your home, hopefully you'll find mental health services near to you right across the UK at hubofhope.co.uk. There was another story, Jake. I just wanted to give this a mention because, again, when I heard it in the news, I thought, oh, I wonder what's going on there. And it's about a physical appearance, but I think there's a mental aspect to it as well. Clinics have seen a huge rise in the number of women applying for cosmetic surgery after they've watched contestants on Love Island telling us they've been inundated with the requests for boob jobs and lip fillers since the show started earlier this summer, or certainly a direct correlation. There's one of the contestants on there apparently has had £30,000 worth of surgery. It's always interesting, this one, of course, where if people have a genuine issue with their personal appearance, we live in a modern age whereby you can do something about that, and that can give you confidence, surgery, which can hugely change people's lives. Mm-hmm. Does it concern you slightly when you hear about it as being part of a trend, as it being part of a TV show, which you look at that and go, right, now I need to go and make those decisions? Is it empowering, or do you think that actually the responsibility of these clinics, many of which do a lot of sort of psychological work, if you like, on that person, we've got to sort of be extra careful about?
Yeah, it's got to be about why you're making that decision. Anybody's entitled to do whatever they want to their own body, of course they are, but it's whether it's for the right or wrong reasons, whether there's something actually behind that. I think it is concerning, especially, you know, we've already talked about Love Island and this kind of idea of what we are meant to look like, what's attractive, that kind of, I if I went on Love Island and stood next to these fellas, I would feel ridiculous.
But I think that's the thing, isn't it? If you've got a personal thing about something, the shape of your nose, but whatever it might be, the size of your, whatever it is, then if it's a personal lived experience, then you're kind of within a place to say, there's something about myself which I don't like. But actually what you're talking about there is seeing other people, yeah, and thinking, I need to be in that box. I need to fit in that category. Somebody changed that for me.
Yeah.
And that's a different thing, isn't it, to thinking, I've always wanted to get rid of that mole on my face. Or that's thinking, make me look like those.
Yeah, like somebody else. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's terrifying, isn't it? And especially if that's I think the person who's had all that surgery is like deemed the most attractive one in there as well.
And she oh, I don't watch it, so she might well be. I think she'd had her ears pinned back when she was 14. I think that's one of the stories. But you think, well, actually, as a kid, that might have been a single issue whereby that might have been a problem for her. And actually, in doing that, might have stopped bullying, name-calling and all kinds of things as well. And that specific to her might have been great. But that doesn't then go, well, oh, look at her, therefore I can do this. And I know that some of the clinics do some great work on this one, because, of course, what they don't want to do is go into a surgery theatre with somebody and say, well, here are your nip, your tuck, your boobs, your lip filler, and then have that person come back and go, you promised me that I'd be happy now.
Yeah.
And actually you go, well, if it's not that specific thing, if there's something else going on there,
yeah,
there's that responsibility for everybody concerned to have that conversation and be open about it.
Yeah, because as you said, I mean, you know, you totally flipped this argument, and that surgery like that can do absolute wonders for somebody's self-confidence and their mental health. But it's about the reason why you're doing it and whether you're chasing something via cosmetic surgery that actually you're never going to stop because it's not actually the reason for it. So yeah, I think there's a whole lot of work there actually to be looking at that psychological impact and what that's meaning for people in their lives.
Yeah, there's a duty of care, I think, that I imagine probably some of these TV shows now employ, because they think we can't be having all these contestants coming on and then going off the rails or whatever. I imagine there's a duty of care to those, but actually, as viewing members of the public, we don't see that, do we?
No.
We also don't see if me and you were going on a TV show where we're going to be on a beach in our swimming shorts for 3 months, however long Love Island's on for, forever it would appear. Me and you would probably get down the gym, wouldn't we? And we'd probably try and work out a bit.
Well, I just think that they just need more dad bods on there. Get the dad bods on, help normalise the dad bod. That's a hard sentence.
I've been told in my ear by producer Lizzie that Jack has a dad bod. I don't know. He might be horrible, but I want him to win. Is he horrible? No, he's nice.
He's the
best one, see?
Yeah.
We all need to be a bit more like Jack. I don't know who Jack is.
Be more Jack.
No idea. But there you go. That wraps up our conversation for this week. I think we have plenty to talk about. Jake, thank you for your time. What are you working on Chasing the Stigma this week?
Keep an eye on our webpage, chasingstigma.co.uk, as we will have some nice things to announce soon. And we're just basically just getting out there. Just to actually something to mention, because what we touched on with the Hub of Hope about there might not be services on there that you're aware of. If that's the case, please tell us. Anybody can register to be on there. Any mental health support or service can register to be on there. It's free to be on there. It's free to use. And you'd register on hubofhope.co.uk.
Brilliant stuff. Jake Mills from Chasing the Stigma. They're up and about on social media. Hubofhope.co.uk for mental health services near to you. And Mental Health Monday is back this coming Monday from Radio City Talk.
Mental Health Monday
on Radio City Talk
with Mick Coyle.
Tackling the Stigma.
Radio City Talk.